divine our origins from the earth or the sky? It depends on how far back we are willing to look. Digging into the earth, we find residue that traces a direct line to our ancestors. Staring at the sky, we free ourselves from the imprisonment of a terrestrial existence. We free ourselves from human trauma. There is a terror in the vastness of it all. These unknowable and known threats, flying objects, aliens, asteroids, such potential of unspeakable damage to our little world.
Standing on the edge of a hill, in the mountains where I grew up, surrounded by endless rainy forests, deep and black, I look to the sky with elation and fear. Those rare nights of clarity, free of fog or clouds, I felt I might very well fall. Not down, but up. Up into that inky, glittering sky. Through time and study, I realized my fantasy was fact. I am falling.
Je tombe.
The earth remains beneath my feet through its own spinning magic. Still, I am falling fast.
We are all space travelers.
Hurtling at a quantifiable but incredible speed through a vast, constantly expanding blackness, speckled with fire, gas, and the calcified remains of forgotten stars.
Une noirceur expansive.
We are made of stardust. Our bones knitted from the powdery residue of an explosion, that big bang. The more we know, the stranger things become. The paradox of peering out at the great beyond is that we are also looking inward, to a time when this world was much smaller, to a time when these distant objects were much closer. To see forward is to see backwards. Locked in an impossible, non-existent present. We move in a bending, folding, multi-dimensional space-time. We look forward and back to a place where the debunked myths of our ancestors regain a certain truth under the flickering light of deep space gazing.
Cosmos Republics found themselves in outer space, drifting further and further away from the Earth. Despite their efforts and frantic messages for help, they and their space capsule continued to drift. Their signal got weaker and weaker, and they were left with only sporadic, unpredictable communication with their compatriots back on Earth.
Au secours.
A popular underground movement formed on Earth. Enthusiasts determined to make a contact with the lost cosmonauts. In basements, universities, secret hideaway places, a small international network built in experimental communication devices to try and reach deep into outer space. The government of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics attempted to suppress this international movement in order to keep its own citizens ignorant of the lost cosmonauts. Concurrently, they undertook measures to attempt the dramatic recovery of the lost space explorers, but without success. By 1983, all contact between the cosmonauts and Earth had ceased. The underground movement had failed to reach them, and the Soviet government had failed to bring them home. In 1984, completely unexpectedly, one last communication was received.
We have accepted our fate. Do not try to retrieve us.
Ce que nous avons découvert ici ne nous permettra pas de revenir.
We can no longer live on Earth. Please, make the most of where you are and always remember.
Infinity is like space and beyond, and infinity is space and beyond.
Can I define infinity? It would take me an infinite time to define infinity.
It never stops, and it goes on for forever. Infinity is space and beyond the universe.
I've never really thought much about it.
Adonis Lushulmi.
Paz e felicidade a todos.
Utopia, an ideal place or state. Utopia might be possible in your imagination. Maybe it's just fiction or like in movies or in cartoons.
It's beyond comprehension.
Because everybody is kind. And there's no fighting or war or no troubles to anybody.
That's where the Beatitudes reign. And where people are kind and decent to one another. And there would be no illness. And all tears will be dried away.
Utopia, infinity, what else?
Somebody would have a warm place to stay in winter, and they would also have enough to eat. Utopia is an existence that we can only conceive of. I mean, they put that together with eternity. It will happen at the end of eternity, I suppose. It will never happen. It just won't happen. It's utopia. It's the aim of one's hopes and desires.
Oh, is it going to be hard? death is when you die and your spirit goes to God, and but your body stays inside a grave.
Well, that is cessation of life. And when you say you want life, that's whatever comes between your birth and your death. What is death? What is death? Death is, I suppose, no movement. It's the possibility of growth, but we have no idea, you know, what happens if you divide this. Not divide, but if you accept the spirit, the Greeks depict the spirit as the butterfly coming out of your mouth at the end of your life. It's a good old way of saying it. Many, if there is such a thing as the soul, I think there is such a thing as the soul. Body are together, it's life, and when the soul and the body are separated.
Have you ever heard someone call your name and then look around to see nobody there? My doctor tells me I drink too much coffee, and that is the reason this happens to me so often. But I know what I hear, my name, loud and clear. And it's always been like this, ever since I was little. Soyez sans crainte, I'm not crazy. I think there are many sounds traveling around us, radio waves, thoughts people are having, vibrations of objects, maybe even the sounds of memories. And they are all around us, and we only access them by accident. I thought maybe, if they were lost, that maybe they could be reached by listening in to this other sound wave, the one that I can hear sometimes. I wanted to try and contact them through this other sound line. I got really obsessed by understanding radio waves and building receivers in my parents' shed. If we can talk to someone on the other side of the planet, living on the opposite side at a different time of day, why couldn't we also find a way to talk to them out there? It looks like the universe is non-local, where there are things that are way far apart from each other, that somehow are still in contact with each other. The universe is a really strange place.
Sweet time, it's like a dream. mind. Let's hold fast to the dream that tastes and sparkles like wine. Who knows if it's real or just something we're dreaming of? What seems like an interlude could be the beginning of love. What seems like an interlude could be the beginning of love.
Story. It is about the past, a past far into the future. Humans had believed there were eons left to worry about the fate of planet Earth. They were wrong. The longer humans existed, the more evidence accumulated that their sun was growing hotter, its size increasing and filling up the sky. Some speculated that humans should return to the oceans from whence they came. But that was not a feasible solution, as these waters had become so polluted and would someday heat to a boil. Scientists proposed and carried out a series of remarkable experiments to move the Earth to a wider and larger orbit around the Sun, further away from a predestined incineration. The plan was to divert a series of asteroids from their belt, to whip them around the Earth, creating a gravitational slingshot that would boost the Earth's orbit. and increase its distance from the sun. Remarkably, they succeeded, and for a long time, the inhabitants of Earth were saved from being engulfed in flames.
However, changing Earth's distance to the sun could only be a temporary solution. It had been known for some time that the sun would eventually exhaust its nuclear fuel, and gravity would compress it to a dwarf star the size of Earth herself. Ultimately, the sun would cool, glowing red, then brown, and finally black. Earth's temperatures would plummet until its surface had become a frozen sheet of ice. After solving the problem of death by incineration, intelligent life was gradually accepting the paradox that action need now be taken to avert the final freeze.
For a million years, there had been proof of the existence of cosmic wormholes, passages through space-time, shortcuts for long journeys across the cosmos. It was also suspected, but never proven, that wormholes not only connected two separate regions within the known universe, but that they could also connect two different universes. The risk of sudden collapse, high radiation, and dangerous contact with exotic matter had stifled further exploration until now. It had become imperative to prepare an escape route.
The gateways were open. The inflation of the universe had expanded many wormholes to macroscopic size. It was time to leave behind the dying universe and be reborn into a new dimension.
After so many tests and countless fatalities, humanity was at last assembled for the greatest exodus, a one-way voyage into the mouth of a black hole. A course was set for destinations unknown. Their only hope would be a parallel universe. There was great rejoicing.
a space traveler.
We all are.
Celestial bodies, mostly made of water. Two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen. We are drawn to water, gathering in large numbers on the shores of oceans, around great lakes. Each one of us is evidence of the incredible resilience of life and of its extreme fragility. We move in harmony and in conflict, orbiting and colliding, never actually touching. The electrons on the surface of our bodies repel all that comes close to the surface of our skin. We can only ever get close to one another. And the result of this proximity has the potential to induce a devastating, even lethal, exchange of fluids. Human skin is a membrane of memories, a story of lives, loves, and losses inscribed on its surface.
Even standing together, we are always alone. I stand on a precipice. Overlooking the glassy surface to which I am drawn, my face reflected, and beyond that, the sky, the hazy billowing atmosphere around me, also full of water. I see the deep, speckled blackness from whence I came, and where I remain, drifting, floating.
This is a small planet orbiting an ordinary star in a commonplace corner of a middling galaxy. Yet all of this is truly amazing. Looking up, I grasp so little. The Earth's atmosphere, light from the sun diffused and refracted in a haze of gases and particles, clouds obstructing my view of the vast emptiness and all the lonely twinkling objects that move around us at all times. This solar system remains mysterious, unknowable. It is impossible to create a scale model of the sun and its planets. So large is the sun, so vast are the distances between the planets.
And this small planet only gets smaller as the universe expands, as our population grows, and as we grow more adept at traversing its atmosphere. It is only when I see this world from the outside in that I grasp what a wisp of a thing it is. If the globe itself is small, its crust and vapors, the vast land, sea, and sky, account for something microscopic. I see the results of eons of eruptions, shifting tectonics and surging tides, the scars of a molten interior emerging to the surface.
Occasionally, I see traces of other objects colliding with the Earth's shell, the wounds of calamitous explosions. I see the results of our incessant digging, networks of channels. Matter brought from below is used to burn, parse out, rationalize, and suppress the very thing that gives us sustenance. Before there was water, there was only fire.
And still I look up into the distant past. Why? To mitigate the future?
Teams of stargazers attempt to protect our planet from destruction by outside forces.
There are billions of objects out there. The smallest of fragments could spell certain death to us all.
I only know this life. I know that other lives are possible, but I only know this glorious, insignificant, and unbelievably fragile existence.
So, this is the story of a legend. It's the legend of people hearing voices. And it's connected to me more personally than anyone else I know, I guess. And it begins in 2010, 2015, in the early part of the last century. And some space explorations had happened by then, you know, like humans had gone to the moon and they'd been in spaceships and, you know, they went on like these small punctual missions to space and would do some tests and stuff. But at that time, it seemed like Earth just wouldn't really recover from the damage that humans had brought upon it. So it seemed natural. for all this space exploration to take place. And then this big project came about, and it was led by NASA, which was the space agency for what was at the time the United States of America. And their project was to isolate an asteroid. And they were going to take this asteroid and insert it into the orbit of our moon. And the idea was to create a new orbital path, you know, by inserting the asteroid into the original orbit. And then that would create an easier path to go to Mars, because Mars is where it was decided that the first settlement off Earth would be happening. And this settlement was called Orion. And in doing so, NASA decided to tap into the intellectual wealth of the rest of the Earth, which was a bit unheard of, because up until then, the United States of America had sort of overlooked, you know, like the intellectual, you know, wealth of countries that were considered too economically poor to have that kind of input. So all of this together, really, like the progress, it took about 10 years to kind of come to, you know, like a project that was really, that seemed really doable. And sure, like in the process, what was really interesting is the technology that was developed to make the project happen also was what led to the Earth kind of recovering its natural ecology. So sure, we lost some species, you know, in the process, but we also gained others that adapted to this new ecological balance that we were achieving. So, you know, anyway, by 2030, a group of 200 volunteers was put together from all of these countries to be the first settlers to Orion. And my grandmother was one of them. And so she had decided that Earth wasn't a place where she wanted to grow her family. And so she left her husband and three kids behind to go and settle, you know, to be part of this first colony to Mars. And she left my mother behind and her two sisters. And their departure date was set for the summer equinox, which was a warm night in June. And the settlers, you know, they got ready for many months. And then the night came and they all said their goodbyes and they boarded the ship. And there was great rejoicing. And the ship was ready to leave. It took off in the dying sunlight. And everyone was so hopeful. But within only 2 hours of the ship had the Earth's ionosphere, we had lost all contact with the ship. And the space agencies sent out so many missions over the next 10 years to try and find the ship. And, you know, there were like even old-fashioned sort of shuttles, you know, trying to find the settlers, but to no avail. They were never found. And since then, you know, like starting from that moment, the parents and the friends of the people that were on the ship have reported that they would sometimes hear their names being called out very clearly, and they would turn around and there would be no one there. They heard voices. And sometimes I think I hear my name being called too. I don't know. I think my doctor says I drink too much coffee, but it's been like that since I was little. I hear my name. And I think, you know, what if that group of settlers, they just chose to not come back to Earth? I know it's a legend, but when I'm at home, my radio is on all times, because I think if ever my grandmother decided that she wanted to get in touch with me, that's probably how she would do it, through the radio.